Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Nick Pecoro, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast deep dives. And today, as you can probably guess by Nick being our guest, we are talking all about the Arizona Diamondbacks, organization that has had a very interesting, I would say, 2020 so far. They've obviously made a World Series run. They've had years where they're right in it. They've had other years where they're not. I will give them credit. Like a lot of teams have trouble kind of running that tightrope of, are we in it or not? The D-backs last year kind of bailed out of it a little bit with trades. And then, as we've seen here, kind of got some of those guys back. You know, we thought that Zach Gallen, who got a qualifying offer, would he be gone? Nope. He's back on a one-year deal. Merrill Kelly, who they turned into a pretty nice prospect haul at the deadline last year, he's back. The rotation's kind of back together. They've made a trade for Nolan Arenado. It's kind of, again, as someone who kind of works on the D-backs 365 days a year, Nick, like, it's been a kind of, I feel like, a fascinating offseason from the outside. What has it been from, you know, as you cover it?
Yeah, well, thanks, first of all, for having me back. I think we're all just kind of surprised at how they spent this offseason. You know, they were giving indications at the end of last year that they were going to be cutting payroll. And after this Zach Gallen signing, they're suddenly like kind of pushing up against the luxury tax, which is a pretty wild thing. I've never had to seriously think about like how guys count against the luxury tax thresholds in my career covering this team. Now I'm having to like kind of brush up a little bit on how it all works. And it's been very surprising. And you look at like the clubhouse has Merrill Kelly and Cole Drake and Mitch Bratt in it. That worked out really well. I don't know if it's quite like Gleyber Torres and Aroldis Chapman, but there aren't too many examples of that sort of thing actually coming true. You hear all the time a guy talking about, oh yeah, I want to come back. It very rarely actually happens. They're looking like they've got a shot. I think there's a lot of questions about this bullpen. But, you know, they're hoping to get AJ Puck and Justin Martinez back at some point during the year. They're hoping Corbin Burnes comes and strengthens the rotation. So they're right there hoping to compete again.
And again, competing, like they do look very competitive. It is the division with the Dodgers. So competitive is like always fighting against the reality of a team that basically goes into every offseason and says, oh, okay, so who's the best free agent on the market? Right. Oh, let's sign him.
Or the top two.
But again, that you're obviously competing for a playoff spot, and this is an organization that looks like they're right in that again. And that kind of dives in, like we have on here as the scroll kind of rolls by, one of the guys that they picked up, David Hageman, made their top five. So like they got a pretty good haul. But number one is Ryan Waldschmidt. And Nick, is kind of, as you kind of line this up, as we put this together, I feel like that this was an organization where this was a very interesting kind of discussion. Right. How did you kind of come to Waldschmidt at one?
Well, I mean, I guess I started thinking Ryan Waldschmidt was sort of an easy call. I thought I was going to get a lot of consensus based on just the season he had. I started asking around and wound up getting a lot of different opinions. The first four guys, Waldschmidt, Cunningham, Crisantes, and Caldwell right there at the bottom of the screen. All four of those guys got, you know, some votes from people that I talked to and, you know, both inside and outside the organization. And I kicked it to a lot of people. You guys were all kicking it around too in the office. We kind of settled on Waldschmidt, but I mean, I think we could have gone in a number of directions. Caldwell, you know, kind of got penalized, I guess, by the club's aggressiveness, whether that's fair or not. I think he was one of the youngest players in high A at the time of his promotion from Visalia. He didn't fare that well there, and that kind of cost him. Crisantes was penalized for, you know, you got to stay on the field. You got to play. And then it came down to Cunningham and Waldschmidt, and Cunningham hadn't done anything yet. And Waldschmidt just came away with a great season. So I think we kind of settled there, but like, I'm not saying that we feel strongly about, you know, Waldschmidt's career turning out significantly better than the other guys.
We balance ceiling, risk, proximity, all these things kind of fit into this. And I would say that Waldschmidt, like, as I look at it, the thing that stands out for him is you have kind of less risk, kind of know that this guy's going to be a big leaguer, and you know, probably have a decent idea what he's going to be as a big leaguer potentially. And I would say like proximity also plays into this too. Like when we look at these other guys, he is closer to the majors. He has kind of already cleared that double A hurdle. There are those kind of aspects. But I would say like, yeah, if you wanted to make the case that Cason Cunningham has more upside, absolutely. Mm-hmm. With Crisantes, is Crisantes the best hitter of this group? Very possibly. But, and then Caldwell has maybe a little bit louder tools than Waldschmidt at the end of the day. But Waldschmidt, I was like, you know, to kind of praise Waldschmidt here, the number one prospect, it does feel like that he has that nice combination of there is some athleticism here, but there's also some real hitting ability to go with it as well, is there not?
Yeah, the under the hood stuff, especially. I mean, you look at the stat line, it's pretty good. You dig a little bit deeper, it's a tiny chase rate, it's a tiny in zone whiff rate. It's a lot of the stuff that, like, you know, portends big league success. And he's doing it like from the jump at the beginning of his professional career. You know, he's holding down. I mean, he was apparently a pretty competent defender in center field. I don't think people are saying that they project him that way, but it does suggest that he's going to be a pretty good defender on a corner outfield. It just feels to me like, I don't know, the more I kind of looked at it, like a floor of like a Mark Canna, you know, Mark Canna in his, mm-hmm. in his better seasons, like that kind of a corner outfielder that really has an idea at the plate, really can put together good at bats, is maybe going to run into 20, 30 home runs, maybe more. I don't know. The questions that we got really revolved around the bat path. It's a pretty steep swing, and it raised questions of, you know, he's heading into a league that has a lot of pitchers that can dominate the top of the zone with fastballs. You know, he pushes back on that and says, look, my strength is the bottom of the zone. I'm going to lock in on that. And, you know, you look at his chase rate, he makes really good swing decisions. He knows where his strengths are, and why should he, you know, have to start changing the pitches that he keys in on if he hasn't been, you know, if he's never struggled.
So this hasn't been a problem for him so far, right? Exactly. Maybe it could become one, but so far he very much can say, I know what I am. This works for me. Why would I change it? Like, yeah, yes, it's got a pretty good case.
He also says, and I, you know, I don't know for sure if this is the case, that he's gotten a lot better on pitches at the top of the zone from his sophomore year in college to where he is today. So he thinks that there's, you know, he's shown an ability to improve in that area. He's not worried about it. And like, you know, look, at the end of the day, you look at all the pitches in a given day in the big leagues that are hit for home runs, they're mistakes. You know, it's all about pitch selection, and the hitters that swing at the right ones are usually the ones that are the most successful. And he seems to have a very good idea. It's a really simple swing. It's a little like Paul Goldschmidt, you know, just not a big stride, not a lot of movement, but he still generates a lot of torque. And you can really see how it works and how it makes sense. Like, now, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, a lot of evaluators, some that I trust, you know, were a little concerned about how steep it is. So, you know, we'll just see how, you never really know until they get to the big league and see how it works.
Right. Again, it's one of those tough things about it. The game teaches you lessons, but when the game hasn't taught you the lesson, it's really hard to say, oh, you need to absolutely change this aspect of you that again, has really worked for him so far. Timetable wise, you look at the D-backs and you look at this infield and you say, okay, it looks like it's pretty set. And then you look at the outfield and you go, okay, obviously there's the Corbin Carroll injury right now, but even taking that part out of it and the Gurriel injury as well, like you have a little bit more uncertainty. Is it, I would not expect that he's in spring training as we talk right now. I would not expect to have any idea that he's going to really compete for a job coming out of spring training, anything like that. But is it possible? Is it realistic that we could be looking at a mid season arrival, depending on how things go, both at the big league level and also with Waldschmidt this year?
Well, they haven't even ruled out the idea that he breaks camp with the team. He is in big league camp. I think probably they were more open to that when they expected Gurriel was going to miss significant time with this, you know, as he recovers from ACL surgery. He looks like nothing happened so far here in the first week of camp. It's kind of been mind blowing. He looks terrific. So the idea that he's going to miss like the first 2 months of the season, it doesn't seem realistic anymore. But that said, like, you know, Gurriel, you know, wasn't a dominant hitter last year. He's getting a little bit older. you know, and he's coming off a major surgery. So we'll see how the production plays out there. Alec Thomas has not been a productive hitter in his big league career. Jordan Lawler is moving into an outfield role now. He's going to be a center fielder. And, you know, he hasn't hit yet in 100 at bats in the big league. So there also isn't a lockdown designated hitter at the moment. I think there's all kinds of opportunities for Ryan Waldschmidt. I would expect that we're going to see him in the big leagues this year, one way or the other, whether it's a, you know, a prolonged runway, I don't know. But I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't make his debut at some point this season.
So that leads into, you just mentioned Jordan Lawler. Jordan Lawler is no longer prospect eligible. And I would say this is one of the players that truly no longer prospect eligible, but very much still is in the, what are we going to get out of Jordan Lawler? It's been a premium prospect for years. With him not being eligible, that obviously means when you look at how's the system better or worse than last year, takes away something here because he was a top 100 prospect. But kind of, I mean, like when you look at the organization as a whole, how do you see it kind of now compared to a year ago at this time?
Better and worse. Certainly they've added a lot of arms. They picked up a lot of pitching depth, especially at the deadline. And then, you know, on through the off season, they traded Blaze Alexander for Cade Stroud, giving them another bullpen arm, option. But you know, those guys that we just talked about, I wouldn't be surprised if any of those four were to become impact big leaguers, but I just don't think they're as you can't confidently say it the way that you could have projected a couple of years ago with Lawler on the kind of trajectory that he was on. You know, we'll see how it plays out for Lawler. It's only been 100 at bats. It seems there are some questions about his, you know, approach, ability to handle right-handed spin. But like, you know, it's probably more about staying on the field. So we'll see how that goes. But I do think that they have, it's a system that has a lot of players that garner support from a handful of scouts, and it like that kind of group can like cycle around. I guess I'm not explaining that very well.
No, I follow you.
I just think like there's not a lot of consensus, but like you can ask a couple of scouts and they'll love Hansel Luis and JD Dix. And, you know, some people think, yeah, I think James Groover has a chance to be an everyday bat still. I'm still in on that. Then you talk to another handful of scouts and they're like, JD Dix doesn't have a position for me. I'm not sure where that goes. You know, Hansel Luis swings too much, or, you know, Tommy Troy just doesn't have enough impact in my opinion, you know? So it's just like, there's a lot of different opinions, but like, there's a lot of guys that some evaluators still give a chance to be everyday players. And I think that there's some truth to that too, from a starting pitching standpoint in the system.
To me, I look at it and say it's a better system than last year overall. Like Lawler, obviously graduation. And again, we don't know right now what Lawler's going to be, but even taking him out of it, I do look at it and say like, I could make a case for all the way up to David Hageman as like top 100 prospect cases in, you know, for all the baseball. I couldn't make a case for three or four guys last year at this time. And then, like you said, you go beyond that. I feel it's a little deeper as far as guys who what often is understandably hard for listeners, for readers to understand is that like that mass of like, you know, we love to rank people. And so like you look at it, it's like, okay, the difference between, I always like to say the difference between 75 and 125 is way less than the difference between 1 and 15 a lot of times on these lists, you know, at the top 100. But going beyond that, I feel like that the D-backs have a lot more guys in that 150 to 350 or 450 in baseball range, which are guys who have some suspect status, but also a reason to like them too, like you just kind of said. They're more of those guys this year.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention, I mean, give them credit for like, a lot of things went well last year developmentally. Tommy Troy put himself back on the map. The top three guys they took in the draft, right? Caldwell, Waldschmidt, Daniel Egan all had very good seasons. Hageman was a great, you know, kind of third piece in a trade at the time, and then arrives and suddenly has this curveball they didn't know about and looks like a you know, mid rotation type of prospects. So they had a lot of things go right. And I agree, it's in better shape, kind of 1-30 than it was before. It just doesn't have that really, you know, elite talent that, you know, maybe they do. It just doesn't, we can't identify it as easily at this point.
There's not that one who's like that slam dunk who's right there right now, who's already checked all these boxes. There's right. guys who have more boxes to check. But Tommy Troy is a perfect example to me of this. Tommy Troy ranked number 10 at this time last year. He ranks number 9 on the D-backs list this year. Now, you could say, ooh, he's moved up one spot. But like Tommy Troy right now is a much better prospect than where he looked like. There's a lot fewer questions about him now than there were last year. The difference is, last year he was number 10 and it was kind of like, well,
we're keeping him alive. We're not giving up yet, but we didn't feel a lot of conviction in it.
Now he's 9 and you're like, oh, Tommy Troy's going to be a big leaguer. We just, you know, like, but these other guys have improved more to where he doesn't move up as much because of that. That's to me, like, and this kind of ties into the next question. We talked about this a little bit. We say who could be next year's number one. Let's assume that Walshmit does graduate. I could make a pretty strong case. I feel like Case and Cunningham, we just said, Crisantes, Caldwell, all these guys could be an even stronger number one prospect than what Walshmit is now at this time next year, I feel like, because Cunningham is going into his first full pro season. Crisantes is coming back from a serious injury. Although if you are a Diamondbacks fan and you're listening to this, you're going, when we talk, you just said about, you got to stay on the field. Shades of Jordan Lawler. Crisantes has had multiple injuries that have derailed him in years. And then Caldwell is coming, you know, is coming off of a year where he got pushed pretty aggressively, but we saw the tools, you know, all that. And you mentioned Hageman as well. These are all guys I feel like, but who would you say right now is most likely of that group to kind of emerge if Walshmit graduates?
I don't have strong conviction in one over the other. I agree. I could see it going any number of ways. I mean, I guess I'd lean Cunningham. I think it's a little bit safer. Like as far as Cunningham to Crisantes, you feel a little bit better about bringing defensive value. I don't know that it's a shortstop. We'll see about that, but I do feel pretty confident that it's up the middle. Crisantes, I think has made some strides at second base, but I think people see it as more of a, he can hold it down, especially if he hits, right? Like that's going to be the carrying tool there. And you know, I'm more going off of what you guys have said, how strongly you guys have felt about Cunningham, you know, coming out of the draft, and how aggressively you guys ranked him. The feedback that I got, I had a few looks from people and it was a little more scattered. You know, he didn't
show debut wasn't great.
Yeah. He didn't show great in Visalia. It looked like, especially from a defensive standpoint, things were moving very quickly for him at shortstop. But I did talk to a couple people that absolutely were all in on the bat, and that pro guys, you know, that they could tell from the time at, you know, Bridge League or wherever it was before he went to Visalia, that they thought this kid was going to hit. I've always liked Crisantes. I think he just hits. He just mashes. It seems like he understands. You know, he has terrific bat to ball. The angles seem to be really good. I think he gets the most out of his power. I'm not sure it's quite an Isak Paredes, Alex Bregman situation. I'm not going that far, but he does seem like that kind of guy that can hit for a little bit more power than you would, you know, you'd give him from like a raw power perspective.
I think that he's got, again, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Like if we said that Dimitri Crisantes had a fully healthy season a year from now, if you said, well, what could he be the number one? Yeah. Now it'd probably be a middle of the top 100 kind of guy, because there are the defensive limitations that are always going to be, you know, he kind of fits in that to go with a Mariners, but like he could be a better version of Michael Arroyo, who's kind of like reaching, you know, the upper level of the minors now, but has now moved to the outfield. Like Crisantes needs to be healthy. And I would say, like, ideally we're going to hear like, oh, hey, by the way, he's that time, you know, he really did a good job of kind of using that time off, you know, away from the field. And hey, defensively, his hands look better, things like that. Yeah. But I would say that overall, yeah, it's something where there's just a lot to like as far as like hitting's the most important thing you can do. And he does that very well.
Yep. Caldwell seems like he has a really good approach, really good idea of the zone, probably could stand to get a touch more aggressive at times. You know, has the speed and the ability to, you know, stick up the middle and center field. Although the reviews I got weren't glowing on, I think he has some work to do out in center. But like, you know, there does seem to be a pretty high floor there in terms of what he brings, just with the approach, the speed, the, you know, kind of bat to ball you know, it's a pretty compact process, you know, like, and those guys don't tend to have super, you know, highs and lows necessarily, at the plate. And then Hagman, like I really wouldn't be surprised if he showed up throwing a couple miles an hour harder, a little further removed from surgery and, you know, puts together a 100 and something innings of, you know, really good work out of the starting rotation. And we're starting to view him, a little more confidently. Probably going to be hard for him to pass all of those bats. Just the way it works with the safety of hitters versus pitchers, right, in these rankings. But I would be shocked.
Got to ask about, there's another guy before we kind of go to the next question I want to ask about, who's not in the top 10, but you and I've had enjoyable, I would say I enjoy talking about him because we like talking about prospects. We like thinking about prospects and all. And so Drew Jones, who was, you know, higher on this list last year, now he's kind of slid into the teens. He's 17th currently on the list. But I bring him up partly because he was the, you know, a prominent first round pick several years ago now. But why are you, you know, like doing your reporting on this? Like, if you're a D-backs fan hearing this, should it be time to kind of like, okay, he's not going to be what we thought? Or is there still something there? Is there, what, where kind of is Drew Jones now as a prospect?
Yeah, a little bit of both, probably. Well, let me ask you, I remember last year you said you had gone through Synergy and watched every Drew Jones batted ball from 2024. Did you do that with 2025?
Yes. I hesitate to say yes, because it sounds like I'm a stalker, but I just have always found him interesting. And so, yes, I have done that again. And by the way, it's not often, but you do see every now and then now, not much, but every now and then he is pulling the ball in the air with a little bit more authority than he has in the past.
That's where I was going with that. I think sometime around late June, early July, things kind of changed. And he started taking much more aggressive swings. He kind of found a swing that worked. I think, I talked to a handful of people that are still, you know, just not in on it, but you do come across a couple of guys here and there that are like, I saw that. It looked a little different. I was on the phone actually with an evaluator with another organization. And I was talking to him about this 6 week stretch that Jones put together, and he was unaware of it and started digging into it while we were talking and watching some video. And he's like, whoa, okay, actually I'm moving him up my pref list right now. He moved him up like seven spots or something based off of, you know, our conversation. Look, I think that doing it for 6 weeks in high A, is a lot different than doing it for a full season. He still has to show that he can do it. He, as the year went on too, he kind of reverted back into some old habits. I get the feeling he maybe will strike out a few times one day and be like, okay, forget this. I'm going up there and I'm going to put the ball in play today. And it changes back. Like, I think there's still some comfort / confidence that he needs to work through. But, the fact that he's shown it in big league, or not big league, professional games, and that it's looked like it's supposed to look for stretches gives me some more confidence that it's, you know, it's in there, you know, that it could come out. Are we talking about a guy that's going to hit in the top half of a big league lineup and be an impact bat? It's harder to see that right now. Could we be talking about a guy that runs into 20 or so? I think I may have said this last year too, like a guy that runs into 20 or so every year and plays a dominant center field and could get you to a 3 or 4 win player. Like, I don't know that I'm betting on it, but I think it's possible.
I would say, like, to me, the thing about it is, and again, like I've always been kind of a skeptic as far as Drew Jones' bat, but like when you look at the defense, when you look at the athleticism, when you look at all those kind of secondary skills and tools that go with everything, he doesn't have to do a whole lot offensively to be a productive and useful player. We're just talking about this with the D-backs big league club, where it's like, there aren't many guys among this group that you're like, okay, other than Corbin Carroll, who's great, that you're like, okay, this guy's going to provide real offensive impact and defensive impact. And Alec Thomas is a guy who's kind of stuck around for a while and really hasn't hit a whole lot, but there's athleticism. There's some, you know, some defense, you know, there's things like that. Drew Jones is a better defender, I would say, at the end of the day, like, could be a better defender. So I kind of look at him and say, like, okay, I struggle to see 20 home runs down the road. Like, I think that, like, kind of what you talked about, we'll see it, little flashes of it now. He really does struggle to keep everything connected in his swing. The lower half often has a mind of its own compared to, like, his hips, his hands. You know, his hands are going one way, and the lower half is not always going with him. And that's why it makes it, I feel like, so much more comfortable for him to slap the ball, to try to drive the ball even. Oppo, where it's like, okay, my lower half's out front, and now I'm going to trust my hands. He trusts his hands. He doesn't always trust the lower half. Mm-hmm. But, okay, let's say that he's a batting 6th, 7th, 8th in a lineup, playing really good defense in center field, running the bases really well, all these things. It's like, that's still a pretty good path to being a useful player, where, okay, it's probably not the impactful guy that you're hoping when you draft him, you know, at the top of the first round. But it's also not a guy where you're like, oh, well, you know, there are first base types and all drafted for their bat at the top of the first round, where, you know, our outfield, Jacob Berry with the Marlins a few years ago, where it's like, you're drafting him for the bat, and then you go, oh, the bat's not there. And you go, well, what else can he do? And it's like, well, not much. I mean, you're drafting him for the bat. Drew Jones can do these other things. And that's where I think it does get kind of interesting. And that's where I think that you don't want to give up on him by any stretch of the imagination too soon. That kind of ties into the next question, which is obviously that's one that you look at it and you say, okay, not ideal that a top of the first round pick, we're now talking about him being useful, but not impactful. Although there, if you look at the first round of that first round, there was a number of those guys at the top of that draft that kind of fit into more into that category. When you look at this organization as a whole, though, what have they been good at developing, and what maybe are some things that they need to work on?
Well, I mean, they've been good at finding their type of position player. And that's generally been the undersized, athletic, often high school position players. You know, guys that play up the middle, you know, have a lot of speed, have good approaches at the plate often. You know, and they're often overlooked by a lot of the industry. They're just not afraid to pull the trigger on guys like Corbin Carroll and Alec Thomas and Cason Cunningham. And I guess you give them Matt McClain to an extent. I mean, they drafted him. They didn't sign him. You know, Dalton Varsho, you know, wasn't a high school guy, but was an undersized player that, you know, has those same, you know, short levers and a little more thump than you'd think. The other direction is, you know, pitching. That's been a struggle. It's been a big topic internally over the entire offseason. You know, they hired Jeremy Bleich away from the Pirates to be an assistant general manager and kind of oversee and maybe overhaul the pitching development. They've talked about, you know, changing the way that their strength and conditioning staff works and maybe trying to push players a little bit harder. They've had a tough time developing all kinds of pitchers, but especially the kind that you kind of see in bulk with other organizations, those, you know, relief arms that throw 95 to 100, the Diamondbacks just don't seem to generate very many of those types of pitchers. They're even
changing the way that, which is a very useful, like low cost way to kind of fill out a bullpen.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and I've said this before, I think it's kind of remarkable that they've been as quasi successful of an organization as they have been over, you know, the history of the franchise, despite, you know, having, I mean, it's hard to think back on homegrown relievers that have had good careers that have, you know, that the Diamondbacks have developed. There just haven't been very many of them at all. They seem to always be having to go out and find answers externally for their bullpen, often having to rebuild it mid-season on the fly. And yet they've been a pretty competitive organization for most of their existence. So like, that's kind of crazy. If they can get that side of things rolling, you know, that would help them in so many ways. So it's like I said, it's been a big focus, and it sounds like they're changing a lot of things, changing the way they do a lot of things internally.
It is crazy to think that Justin Martinez is probably one of the better success stories, you know, as far as homegrown relievers. And I mean, he's had a year where he was really wild. He had a year was good, then his year was hurt. Yeah. And that's still, you know, kind of fits that. Well, that's going to wrap up the video portion of this, of the deep dive. If you're on the podcast feed, stick around, and we're going to talk more about sleepers right after this quick break.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for university, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's football team? Or raise funds for a small business, a charity, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality, and help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
So Nick, going past the top 10, who are some of the players? We said this is a deeper list. I would say, especially if you look at 11 to 18, 19 on this list, Drew Jones, as we said, was 17. Coming off of, I would say, it's another year. It's not, but he slid down in part because this system has gotten deeper. Lou James Groover has shown flashes. He slid down, I think, in part because this system has gotten deeper. Who are some of the guys who stand out outside of the top 10 to you that you kind of are very intrigued by?
I got some really good feedback on Carlos Vejalanda. We have him at 19. He's a catcher who reached Visalia last year. This isn't a draft player. This was an international player out of Venezuela, but he does have the same sort of stocky build, short levers, you know, that sort of
what
thing
they like.
that defines the, it's a Diamondbacks hitter. He's got a strong arm. He's seen as a good defender. You know, people talk about him as a kid that has a chance to be a leader behind the plate, handles a staff well. You know, there's some people internally that like Ivan Luciano still as the better catcher, but most people seem to have kind of shifted to Vejalanda going forward. So that's probably the first name that jumps out to me. You know, and then further down the list, there's a couple of arms. Well, Mason Marriott had a really interesting kind of pop at the beginning of last season before he hurt his elbow and wound up getting Tommy John. I'm sure he'll be back at some point midway through this season. He's an interesting arm. But then, you know, Jaytuan Kelly and Dean Livingston are a couple of pitchers further down that I'm curious to see how it goes with them, in part because of what we just talked about, you know, how they do with these teenage pitching prospects, if they can, you know, coax a little bit more velocity, or just develop, that type of guy into a big league starting pitcher.
Because Kelly took a step forward that way, like last year, which was very encouraging. Like if you were, we would have been talking about him at this time a year ago, because it was like,
right,
okay, he's a soft tosser. And then he took a 4-mile-an-hour jump to where you no longer have to throw the soft tosser title on him.
Yeah, I didn't, he did not come up in my reporting last year. He made huge strides from year over year. And you know, it's a big physical kid. You know, we have him listed at 6'3", 257. You know, it's a guy that looks like he can eat up a bunch of innings. And then Livingston, you know, he was there, where was he? Fourth round pick out of Georgia. I'm interested to see how this goes. They do not spend very much draft capital on high school pitching. They haven't since Mike Hazen got here. And this guy feels like a really good test subject for, you know, whether they can coax the sort of mid rotation potential out of him that seems to be in there.
One other I'll bring up that I'm just kind of intrigued, because you mentioned about the dearth of relievers that they've developed. I mean, I know that I think the plan initially with Brian Curley is to kind of see, you know, maybe they may want to see if he starts. I kind of envision at the end of the day that he's most likely I think he was their, you know, he was a third rounder, but under slot that they took from Georgia. And we've seen him touch 100 in the past. Short right-hander, kind of with that fastball that can live at the top of the zone. And I kind of could see him, if everything breaks right, as reliever, being kind of one of those guys that fits that category of, you know, you kind of, they're never going to be probably even a closer, but useful to have a number of those guys who can come in and give you, you know, an inning or two of, you know, again, 100 is still 100. I know that more guys do it, but if you can live in those upper 90s, that gives you the chance to make everything else play up as well. He's another one to me. On the position player side, you mentioned there are a couple of guys who are a little higher up, but you mentioned Luis, you mentioned Groover kind of earlier. I feel like that those are two that's worth at least asking about, because like if you said outside of the top 10, we already mentioned Drew Jones, position player wise, like who are guys who could, if everything breaks right, be big league contributors or regulars? I feel like that those guys still kind of fit in that, but they have kind of those, you talked about it earlier, like with Luis, kind of the question is okay, he's moving down the defensive spectrum. And the question kind of a lot of it is how far down is he going to move? Right. Like, is that kind of the, like where is he now?
Yeah. There has been some talk about center field with him. It doesn't seem as though it's going to be shortstop anymore. He's a hard one for me. It seems like he's a hard one for a lot of evaluators too. You have to give him credit for hitting. I mean, he hit 300 in Hillsboro last year, but when you start looking under the hood and you see a 34% chase rate, a high swing rate, he's very aggressive. And it just tends, that sort of thing tends to get exploited as you move up. So I think there's a lot of people that have, you know, a lot of pause when it comes to him. I mentioned earlier just in passing, and I feel like we should come back to him rather than my one throwaway comment being all that we say about JD Dix. Mm-hmm. I think that probably that's another guy from last year's draft that showed very well in his debut. And the 24 draft, I guess it was. And I think there's a lot of people that think this is a very hitterish guy. You know, smooth swing from both sides of the plate, good field barrel up the ball, a frame that can add significant strength. You know, there are questions about the defense. You know, he had a shoulder thing. I think his was it leading into his spring of his senior year. You know, the throw from shortstop is probably too much. It's probably a second baseman only. Although people do talk about him as a potential center fielder as well.
They got a lot of those guys.
They really
Tommy do. Troy Tommy fits Troy, that too, yes, right?
100%. I was just going to say that it's very funny. Just that they were talking about trading a second baseman, you know, very prominently in the off season. And I wondered if, you know, just the number of guys that kind of project at that position going forward, including Cresantes, you know, was a factor in that. So I think I'm thinking back to a question from long ago. I wouldn't be that shocked if JD Dix worked his way into the number one prospect conversation. That's a bit of a darker horse, but I do think that the reviews that I got on him and the conviction that the industry seems to have in his bat is worth mentioning.
We talk about the D-backs and their proclivity for shorter levered hitters. There's also the amazing D-backs thing, which I don't think they're choosing for, but Dix also has had a shoulder injury, which if you're going to be a prominent D-backs prospect, having a shoulder injury seems to be also as a position player, kind of a key part of it. You know, Corbin Carroll, obviously, Five Drew Jones.
Yeah. Corbin Carroll, Drew Jones, Jordan Lawler, Cresantes, and Dix. That's crazy.
That is really crazy.
For most of them, it's not the throwing shoulder. It's the other shoulder. Dix, it was his throwing shoulder. It's a bizarre thing. I don't know how to explain it.
You also said Troy did not have shoulder injuries. Troy had hamstring injury, groin injuries in 24. We saw better from him. He reached AAA. Still questions about defensively, you know, like, but it did seem like moving him predominantly to second help the bat play better probably as well, because like it just was asking less of him. He wasn't being asked to do something that he really just at the end of the day was too stretched to do. How, like, I feel like it's probably more role player than like everyday regular, but that's an improvement from where we were talking about this time last year. How much did he kind of recharge himself of kind of putting himself into the long-term conversation, you know, for the big league?
Yeah, it was a really big year for him. You mentioned the injuries in 2024. It was one of those things where he hurt himself late in spring training, really didn't want to start the year on the injured list, kind of forced himself to, you know, sped himself up to be ready to go out to Hillsborough to start the year. Things went very poorly. He wound up going on the injured list. Then he wound up really pressing and trying to make up for bad numbers, you know, and trying to get them back to where they need to be. And that usually doesn't end well. You hear that all the time.
You can't go 8-for-4.
Yep. And it felt like just kind of a fresh start for him was really big last year. And it was a really good performance. I had a lot of scouts, at least three guys that, you know, the first 2 years of his professional career were telling me, I don't see it. I just don't see a path for this guy. Come back to me after last season and say, I was wrong about Tommy Troy. I feel a lot better about what he can be going forward. I agree with you. I think that it's probably a little bit more of a move all over the field type of you know, part-time, you know, bat mostly. But you know, I also had some people say, like, you know, they don't think that he's that far away from unlocking a thing or two here in terms of the way that he drives the ball to being, you know, the kind of hitter that profiles as an everyday guy. It, again, just another one of those guys that, like, you have a segment of the industry that's like, I can really see it happening here. And then other people are like, probably more of a utility. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Just not a ton of consensus, I would say, up and down in this organization.
And again, it's an interesting organization. And I think it's going to be really an interesting 2026. As you just laid out, there's a lot of guys who we want to see some guys come back. We want to see some guys get their first full season. Some guys will be knocking on the door of the major leagues. We'll be covering, obviously, you know, Nick will be covering it for the Arizona Republic, and we'll be covering it at baseballamerica.com as well. Thank you for joining us on another of the Baseball America Deep Dives. We're rounding third on these. We're not, you know, we still have a few to go, but we will have these all done by, I think, the second week of spring training games. We're almost there for games too. We have college games. When is the D-backs first spring training game?
2 days from now on, it's on Friday. And I want to say, as someone who's starting to think about his dynasty draft coming up, these are very helpful. I appreciate that you guys
new rankings that posted today. We have new rankings that posted today, up to 500, trying to reflect as we, you know, again, we're the crazy thing about it is how much it's great now that spring training's back and we get real actual news. Unfortunately, right now, so much of it being like so-and-so is hurt and we'll not be back until whatever, or, you know, the Pablo Lopez news, unfortunately, that we heard yesterday and things like that all around the game. But it is great to have baseball back. You know, our long, cold off season is nearing an end. So thank you again for the download. For Nick, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.